Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal on the 27th of October, 2023. I got to tell you, all the news is extremely grim. I don't just think World War II is on the way. I believe it has already begun. There's a wonderful piece by Alistair Crook entitled "That Escalation Cannot Be Stopped." On Oon's review, this is a very nice analysis of what's been taking place. And where he explains, escalation cannot be stopped. The White House is rattled. Escalation might all fuse into one. He began with a Tom Friedman of the New York Times, warning, "I believe that if Israel rushes headlong into Gaza now, unilaterally to destroy Hamas, they'll be making a grave mistake. It'll be devastating for Israeli interests and American interests." Remember, the New York Times is dominated by dual citizen journalists. "It could trigger a global conflagration and explode the entire pro-American alliance structure the U.S. has built. I'm talking about the Camp David peace treaty, the Oslo peace accords, the Abraham Accords, the possible normalization of relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. The whole thing could go up in flames." Unfortunately, a senior U.S. official told Friedman, "Israeli military leaders are actually more hawkish than the prime minister now. They are red with rage and determined to deliver a blow to Hamas that the whole neighborhood will never forget. They want to slaughter Gaza. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's overwhelming." He mentions, "It's no coincidence Netanyahu flourished a map of Israel during his General Assembly address last month, in which Israel dominated from the river to the sea, and Palestine, indeed any Palestinian territory, was non-existent. Tom Friedman may fear that just as NATO's impaired performance in Ukraine has ruptured the NATO myth, so too 7 October Israeli military and intelligence collapse and what happened in its wake in Gaza might explode the entire pro-American alliance structure in the Middle East. Indeed, I think it's a reasonable inference that the most damaging aspect of the inside job, and we know it was an inside job, which Bibi designed to have a pretext to attack Gaza, that the most important consequence was shattering the aura of Israeli invincibility, that it had a powerful military, that it couldn't be stopped. I mean, it's just stunning how much the illusion has been shattered. 7 hours with no response. Meanwhile, Colonel McGregor reports we're on the brink of war. I mean, this guy is so extremely good. Let me listen to the colonel.
We should just briefly take a minute and point out that the war in Ukraine is militarily over. And the $60 billion that Washington is planning to send to the Ukrainian government is really life support to pay the government, pay what's left of the Ukrainian armed forces, maintain some semblance of services. Right now, there are 14 and 15-year-old boys being captured by the Russians on the ground in Ukraine. That situation is really dire. So it will continue, but it's effectively over. And at some point, I think that recognition will be announced. But at the moment, nobody wants to admit failure. Now, when it comes to the Middle East, it cannot be viewed in complete isolation from Ukraine, and I'll explain that in a second. What we need to know now is that there are two things that have happened. First, we had this horrific attack on 7 October. 3,000 fighters, primarily from Hamas and also Palestinian Jihad, came into Israel, committed atrocities against the Israeli population, murdered 1,300 Israelis in the process, including some soldiers. How this came about is a huge question. No one has answered it. I was in Israel in 2020. I actually went down to Gaza. I saw the Israeli security measures along that border. They were excellent. And it is inconceivable to me that this happened. So if I were an Israeli, I'd want some answers. Right now, of course, Mr. Netanyahu is not interested in providing any answers. He's too busy driving this war. Everyone who has looked at what Hamas did agrees that Hamas needs to be eradicated. I haven't run into anybody who disagrees with that. That includes, for instance, King Abdullah of Jordan, who spoke very eloquently on this in the Cairo conference. General Sisi in Egypt feels the same way. Mr. Erdogan, although he's recently changed his view, spoke out against Hamas initially. I don't think anybody disputes that. The problem is that the campaign to eradicate Hamas has rapidly turned into a campaign to effectively eradicate the whole Gaza population. The first step in that direction is to move 1 million people out of northern Gaza, forcing them south, and then to move into northern Gaza with troops and root out and destroy whatever is left of Hamas. Meanwhile, we have a bombing campaign going on that's killed 5,000 Palestinians. No one in Israel is shedding any tears over that, but that's not going down well in the rest of the region. And people oppose this notion of collective punishment. So whatever moral high ground the Israelis have is eroding quickly because they're seen as taking out these measures against the population. They would like to see the whole population pushed into Egypt. General Sisi has said no, not because he hates Palestinians, but because he's got his own problems. Egypt has an enormous population living on a relatively modest infrastructure. Adding another 2 million people is not a good answer. By the way, he also knows that these 2.2 million Palestinians, if they moved into Egypt just to 20 miles or 30 miles away, would not solve the problem because they would continue to be anti-Israeli and probably continue to be hostile. So this is a difficult problem to solve because in the final analysis, Hamas is not just a group of disgruntled people. It's an idea. And the idea is what you want to destroy or defeat. You want to rob it of its strength. No one is giving that much thought right now because everyone is emoting. Emotion is driving everything. Kill all the Palestinians, solve the problem. This mentality. At the same time, we're essentially providing Mr. Netanyahu and his government with a blank check. In fact, Secretary of State Blinken, who comes across increasingly as the commander-in-chief as opposed to President Biden, since he's obviously far more articulate and coherent in his speech, has essentially said, you know, we're in this to the end with Mr. Netanyahu. And this sort of unconditional support, or what some people are calling a blank check, is very dangerous because the United States is weakened from its previous state. This is not 1991. We do not have the enormous military power that we once had at that point. And the military power we have is still useful, but in many cases, it's not the right military power for today and the future because technology has changed. Capabilities have emerged that are new and different. And we're hurling the same old World War II force structure back into action. Only this time, we have practically no army at all. We're talking about 450,000 people in the active army. More recently, I read that 70% of the soldiers are supposedly overweight. That sort of thing was incomprehensible when I was on active duty. And their training is being widely questioned. And we have these very divisive policies pitting one racial group against another inside the force. All of these things work to our disadvantage in any confrontation that we have to be drawn into. The Navy has a lot of capability, but it too has difficulty manning its ships, has a huge morale problem. Nevertheless, we're going to bring together two carrier battle groups to build a task force. That includes some submarines as well, obviously, and at least 2,000 Marines floating out there in the Mediterranean. But in order for this to work and survive, they have to operate somewhere north and west of Sicily because the range of weapons that could be used to engage them is so great that they are at very high risk if they close the distance between Israel and themselves. So this is a very strange set of circumstances. Now, right now, American forces in the Middle East, in Syria, in Iraq, elsewhere, are being attacked. We've had at least 24 wounded, one dead, maybe more. We just don't know, and no one's really telling us the truth. But in Syria, for instance, we have 1,000 soldiers sitting on top of Syria's only access to oil and its most useful agricultural area. Ostensibly, we say to harm Mr. Assad. Well, all of our attempts to harm Mr. Assad have failed. And right now, this puts us in a position where we could be attacked by the Turks, because just a few days ago, or I think a couple of weeks ago now, we shot down a Turkish drone surveillance aircraft. Needless to say, that did not endear us to Mr. Erdogan and the Turks.
There's much more that he has to say, but I think he's got the big picture basically right. The United States is in an untenable position. But get this, and let me explain exactly how this is playing out. U.S. strikes Iran's, you know, their guard, their best troops for attacks on U.S. troops. U.S. two U.S. fighter jets dropped weapon and ammunition facilities in Syria on Friday in retaliation for attacks on U.S. forces by Iranian-backed militias. As concern grew, the Israel-Hamas conflict might spread in the Middle East. President Biden ordered strikes on the two facilities used by Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps and militia groups it backs, warning the U.S. will take additional measures if attacks by Iran's proxies continue. Now, Iran isn't doing that. Iran is attacking U.S. troops. Iran's too smart to do that. What's going on is Israel is using Iranian weapons to attack U.S. forces and then claiming it was Iran to get the United States to attack Hamas and other proxies for Iran. That's exactly how it's done. And because the United States is complicit in this whole charade, it's happening. Here we have a report. U.S. bombs Syria in an effort to provoke Iran into World War III. That's coming from Natural News. Mike Adams, he's got it right. Here we have the Clash daily reporting. Are Biden statements now leading us to war with Iran and China? Talking heads warned us that Trump would trigger, the talking heads who warned us Trump would trigger World War III are awfully quiet now, because here's Biden actually doing it. Different presidents have had various different attitudes toward national defense. Peace through strength, speak softly and carry a big stick. No better friend, no worse enemy, exemplify one approach, lead from behind quite another. Obama, of course, was the last mention. Before that were Reagan, Teddy Roosevelt, and Trump, respectively. Biden proclaimed America is back when he took his place behind the irresolute desk. But what was America back to? He's been in the White House long enough that a picture of his posture as commander-in-chief is beginning to form. And, of course, I think Colonel McGregor had it exactly right. It's Antony Blinken who's calling the shots here in foreign policy. In fact, we know this is not a real Joe Biden. This is a fake. This is an actor. We have no idea who it really is. He's wearing a mask. He's taking instructions. He's reading a script. And I think it has fallen to the key players in the administration, Secretary of the Treasury, for example, who happens to be Jewish, Secretary of DHS, for example, who happens to be Jewish, Attorney General, for example, who happens to be Jewish, Secretary of State, who happens to be Jewish. They're all running this for the benefit of Israel. Even Blinken, when he went to visit Erdogan in Turkey, shocked the Turkish president by saying, I approach this as a Jew, not as the American Secretary of State. Well, that's all wrong. It actually confirms what I've reported to you as having been my very first political speech in 2008 on 15 April, Tax Day, at a Ron Paul Freedom Rally, hit on the grass outside the Capitol in Washington, D.C., where I gave a talk that would later be published under the heading 9/11 and the Neocon Agenda, in which I explained that dual citizens should never be placed in decision-making or policy-shaping positions, because you cannot know that their loyalty to the other state does not outweigh their loyalty to the United States. Well, here I think there's just no doubt about it. You got Blinken, for example, really in his role as Secretary of State, in his one of our commentators observed, is emerging more and more as though he were the commander-in-chief operating on behalf of Israel. He doesn't give a rat's ass about the United States. And similar for the other, like Mayorkas allowing the flooding across our border, like Mellon claiming we can finance two wars at the same time, and maybe they're talking about three, when the more honest brokers, such as Scott Ritter, explain that while in the past we might have had a policy or felt we were in a position to conduct 2.5 wars at a time, today, this year now, we cannot conduct even one. And I dare say, you know, the Russians have now taken to patrolling the Black Sea, which they haven't done in the past. They have their planes equipped with these missiles that can reach our ships in the Mediterranean, so that if they must, they will take them out. These are hypersonic. They don't follow a conventional trajectory. They're unstoppable. The United States cannot stop these Russian weapons. And frankly, you know, this is just brilliant, as it's designed by Bibi Netanyahu to find a way to induce the United States to attack Iran. And I mean, remember, Iran is the arch enemy of Israel. Israel wants more than anything else for Iran to be destroyed. I have been to Iran. I know a fair amount about its history. It's a great nation. It's a very peaceful nation. In fact, since 1775, think about it, since 1775, Iran has not launched a war of aggression against any other state since 1775. The war with Iraq was initiated by Saddam Hussein with the encouragement of the American government, and both sides lost about 1 million. It was a catastrophe. But it was Iran only acting in self-defense. It has an ancient civilization, massive artifacts. It's a peace-loving nation, which have been massively demonized by Israel and the United States as well. Now, I have a report here that disturbs me greatly, suggesting that Vladimir Putin may have had a heart attack. Get this. Putin heart stops. Cardiac arrest lands Russian leader in ICU. According to unconfirmed reports, President Vladimir Putin experienced a cardiac arrest and is currently in intensive care. These reports emerge from the Telegram channel General SVR, supposedly operated by a former Kremlin insider. The channel statement mentioned Putin was found on his bedroom floor by his security officers, surrounded by overturned food and drink on an overturned table. They describe how Putin convulsively arched and rolled his eyes while lying on the floor. The doctors on duty at the residence were immediately called to attend to him, and he was later transferred to a specially equipped room in his residence for further medical treatment. Now, the article adds, it's important to broach news with skepticism, especially when the source is unconfirmed. There have been ongoing rumors about Putin's health, with media outlets suggesting he may be seriously ill. However, let's not jump to conclusion just yet. It wouldn't be surprising if some people try to exploit these rumors to create chaos and uncertainty. We need to wait for verified information before making any definitive statements about Putin's condition. Well, I agree with all of that. But let me say, inducing heart attacks is something that can be done with directed energy weapons. We have lots of targeted individuals who are hit by directed energy weapons. I mean, it's become a regular matter. Dr. Catherine Horton has led a legal challenge to directed energy weapons in international courts. Inducing heart attacks is a classic CIA technique for dealing with foreign leaders. Now, what bothers me about this profoundly and why I cannot dismiss this as merely a rumor that it may be true is the timing. The timing is exquisite. You have U.S. Attacking Hezbollah and Iranian forces or proxies in Syria. Russia has a capability of defeating that. They have the best anti-plane missiles in the world. They could put a halt to it, but if Putin is incapacitated, it may create a level of uncertainty in decision-making. They're going to have to find a replacement absolutely immediately, because this is, in my judgment, a critical juncture in the history of the world. I actually believe the U.S. forces attacking the Iranian proxies in Syria is the initiation of World War III. We have no business doing that. We shouldn't have our forces there anyway, and I guarantee you 100% those attacks are, with very high probability, initiated by Israel to make it appear Iran was responsible. Now, Palestinians or Hezbollah or others who are opposed to the United States, which has become such a monster worldwide and inflicted so much death and devastation in the Middle East, that would not surprise me. But the whole point is, this is like one planet source publishes a story, and another planet source picks up the story and runs with it as though it were true. I am suggesting that's what's going on here regarding these attacks being attributed to Iran. They're being planted or concocted, and then other sources are picking up and running with them as though they were true. Because Blinken is running this for Israel. There's nothing Bibi would like better than for the United States to be attacking Hezbollah. Well, today I have a guest, very interesting guy, Larka from Texas, who has thoughts about a whole lot of issues, but for the initiation, Lark, give me your thoughts about all the stories I've just been reporting.
Well, you'll forgive me if I say to you that I don't generally focus any attention whatsoever to anything that emanates from the TV at all.
Lark, I'm not talking about TV. This didn't come from TV. Another source that I'm telling you are particularly TV. And Colonel McGregor is absolutely reliable. Though, you know, it's very rare I find anything he has to say that takes exception. Just accept what I'm telling you, what I'm reporting as true, and give me your thoughts about it.
Well, I think that they're moving all of humanity along according to a plan. And a lot of people are focused on current events. And it hasn't been my focus, Jim, for 19 years. I'm not oblivious to it, of course. You cannot help.
Okay, Lark, look. Yeah, your audio is rather bad. I gave you a backup number. I want you to call back using that backup number, and we'll have better audio after the break. We have hard breaks coming down, and I won't put you on the spot about international developments. We'll talk about other issues where you are very, very prepared to address. Let me just add, Western military's growing role in Israel's Gaza campaign, U.S. Marine generals and special ops on the ground, as France advocates coalition involvement, and as they want NATO to get involved, which is absolute rubbish. Meanwhile, the Jews are doing this Holocaust bullshit again. We're getting reports about that. Biden rushes to undo his big mistake with Israel, which had to do with sending munitions that have been stored in Israel, 155 howitzer shells, to Ukraine. Talk about being torn between a rock and a hard place, trying to support Ukraine and support Israel when we have virtually no munitions left. I mean, this is just the absurdity of the United States getting bogged down in wars, especially in the Middle East. But we're already so deeply involved in Ukraine, and it's been a disaster. Stand by. The situation very, very bad.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you. Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Let me just say, Lark has got a lot to cover. He wants to talk about how war is waged in the information age, human resources, that people are organized to wage war upon their own doomed or damnable selves. Good stuff. We had a bad connection, so I've asked him to call in using a different number. He's not here yet. So let me continue with some further reports. Here's the latest. U.S. airstrikes target eastern Syria. This is from antiwar.com. The Pentagon says its strikes were in retaliation for the recent drone and rocket attacks on U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria. The Pentagon said Thursday night it launched airstrikes in eastern Syria that targeted two facilities used by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard and affiliated groups, a significant escalation that makes a regional war more likely amid Israel's bombardment of Gaza. Lark, am I right? We got you here, my friend.
I hope so.
Oh, yeah. God, my God, the difference in the quality of the sound, Lark, is fantastic. Now, I was introducing your theme about, you know, conducting warfare in the information age. Go for it.
Well, of course, I've been focused on communitarianism and its correlation to communitarian law for 19 years, Jim. And so I try to stand back from the tumult and the fray and pretend I'm a general, because I want to get into the general and the mastermind's thinking behind the current events of the day. And so when we talk about war and we talk about communitarianism, the correlation to communitarian law, there's really only three words that we need to remember. And first of all is the overarching two-part agenda for what's termed global to local communitarian governance. Remember, communitarianism is really nothing more than a false dialectic, a synthesis between the thesis, say, capitalism, juxtaposed against its antithesis, which is, say, communism, to produce communitarianism. So capitalism plus communism equals communitarianism. So those two words are, number one, depopulation, and number two, techno-slavery. That's the two-part overarching agenda for communitarian governance. This is the plan. And when we talk about depopulation, what we're really talking about is total war. Okay, because see, communitarianism is a system of totalitarianism. That's what it is. So if you don't like that word, substitute totalitarianism, because this time it's for all the marbles in this information age. When we talk about total war, go ahead.
No, Lark, I was just going to interject to say, when you talk about communitarianism, then you're talking something like an egalitarian society where everyone's treated the same and there's no private property and there are no distinctions in terms of achievement and ownership and recognition, and the government is absolutely in control. Is that roughly what you mean thereby?
Yes, but of course it's a lie.
because we're talking about total control of your behavior and your movements. Okay, we've had discussions today about smart cities, for instance. But let me back up so that your listeners can appreciate the impact of what this C word, this word communitarianism, has upon us all, because it is the system. We're in it. It's here. It's now. Now, you never hear the word bandied about on your television screen, through the radio airwaves. People don't talk about it at the water cooler at work. You're not going to hear it in the church pews or outside of the church and even the synagogues or the mosques. But it's something that has been worked on forever. It's an old plan, and now it's being executed in this time of the information age, in the time in which we have instant connectedness, the world is hyper-connected. So now you can control the movements of people with an email, millions at a time. And this is something that heretofore in human history has not occurred. So the technology itself is fraught with risk and rewards, but also dangers. So backing up to depopulation. Depopulation is simply a euphemism for total war. And in the information age, in the time in which we live, warfare can be asymmetric, psychological, cultural, socioeconomic. It can be lawfare. It could be chemical warfare. Every kind of warfare that you ordinarily don't think of is warfare in the modern age. In fact, the Department of Defense and in the boardrooms of big media corporations, the watchword today is mimetic warfare or mimetic engineering. And that goes to Richard Dawkins' 1976 book called The Selfish Gene, in which he coined a word, meme, M-E-M-E. And basically what that is simply a unit of cultural replication. So memes are bandied about in a time of war because it is said that, you know, you are either a parasite or you're a host, as we see in nature. And a meme is something that is a parasitical device which has been implanted between your ears. And you repeat it. And the person that you repeat it to repeats it. Well, this is considered a successful meme. Okay? The parasite, the meme, has found its host. That's you. And you're repeating these things, whether they are... they're elements of language, elements of communication. So that's what number one is in a two-part overarching agenda. It's total war, and the war is on you. That means that we are behind enemy lines. We are behind enemy lines, because y'all might remember several years ago there was a popular, or shall we say, inglorious headline that was splashed across the pages of Newsweek magazine. You can do a search today. And on that was depicted the words, "We are all socialists now." You had a picture of a gloved red hand shaking hands with a gloved blue hand. This is when John Meacham was the editor of Newsweek magazine, but it's more proper, more correct to say that we are all communitarians now. This helps you capture the flavor of the behaviorist, the social scientist, the economist, and the way they think. Okay? Because we live in a time in which words like sociocracy have currency. And you can look that one up too. But part two of that overarching agenda is what we call techno-slavery. But first, we have to understand what is a technology, because techno-slavery is simply a word like socioeconomics, a rather new word in the English lexicon, that combines technology and slavery. So it's technological slavery. This is number two of the grand plan, the overarching agenda, communitarianism, communitarian law. So a technology is simply a tool. It is a man-made contrivance, a contrivance of man. It can be an anvil, an axe, a rock, a stick. It can be a fulcrum, a lever. It can be any of the things that we identify with modern life that we know are contrivances or inventions of man. But the oldest technology is language itself in all of its permutations, all of its manifestations, from the time we crawled out of the cave, shall we say. The first thing that we sought to do was to communicate with our fellows. And very often we borrowed sounds from nature in order to effect oral communication. So there you have it. This is the grand plan. Total war on you, the individual, whoever's listening. And number two is to enslave you to this system where you cannot extricate yourself. Pretty much like you are an errant insect, and you happen upon a spider's web, and all of a sudden you say, oh my, I'm stuck. How do I get out? I don't want to be stuck. I've got things I've got to do, like eat. And I was on my way to doing something else, and all of a sudden now I'm stuck in this spider's web. So if you do not have some kind of a limb, an arm or a leg by which you can extricate from this spider's web, then you are eventually going to become dinner for the spider. What's going to happen is you're going to flail about, and you're going to sap your strength. You're going to lose your energy. You're going to get weak. And the spider's just going to take its good old time until such time that he wants to basically suck your life essence out of you before you actually finally die. Because that's what allows the spider to live. And then so you wind up becoming just a shell of your former self, which is left to decompose. So there you have it. Two-part overarching agenda that we have to be mindful of. When we talk about communitarian law, we have to understand that this is the law of the European Union today. In the French, it's known as acquis communautaire, but it has its counterparts in all the languages spoken in Europe today, including in the Commonwealth countries. Remember, the Commonwealth countries, the British Commonwealth of Nations, they vote as one block in the United Nations. So that's still the driving force of in world affairs today. Because, see, everything has been moving to control by a centralizing authority through the United Nations. But really, the centralizing authority is what's called the money. At the end of the day, it's money which controls our behaviors and guides our destinies, however we call it, however we term it. And so what do we stand to lose, Jim, more than anything else, and why this time is so important for us to be generals and recognize the future, and especially if we have children or grandchildren? What will we be leaving our progeny? You know, will they be spitting on our graves 100 years from now if they haven't already dug up the cemeteries? And what that is the word property. So remember I said there's only three words you need to remember. Number one is the plan, the battle plan, and the two-part overarching agenda, depopulation or total war, and your actual slavery. Slavery begins in the mind. Three is property. And what is property? Well, property, first and foremost, is the psychophysical being, which is you. It's that which resides inside your own skin. Who else has a higher claim on your psychophysical being, your body, your property than you. Nobody, not on this earthly plane of material existence. Okay, so that means to say that property is not just where you hang your hat up at night. Property is not just your stuff. Property is what is occurring between your ears. It's everything that you rely upon just to even live. You know, the breath of fresh air. Remember breath, which comes from spiritus. This is something that is unconscious, but it's something that's necessary to our survival, is breath. And then after that, what do we need? We need water, and we need potable water, and we need nourishment or food. So all these things, really, breath, oxygen from the air we breathe, water, and food is really one word. It's nourishment. It's nourishment. Well, when you become a slave, then you become the property of another or others. You have no rights whatsoever. And property, as we understand it, cannot own property. And so that's what we stand to lose, is free will, exercise of free will, freedom of choice, everything associated with that word freedom. And when it comes to liberty, what we're really talking about is locomotion. Your ability to go from point A to point B unencumbered, without any encumbrances, and of your own volition, of your own free will. When you lose those things, freedom and liberty, you become a slave. And this is, I'm telling you, what is so important about the time in which we live, is because we, the people who are alive today, not only we are allowing ourselves to become enslaved, we're in a time where these people understand, the planners, shall we say, the perpetrators, they understand this is for all the marbles. This is for ownership and control of the future. And so that's why I focus on the things that I focus on, Jim, because so few people today are speaking about it. But I know it's a word, it's a multisyllabic word, and it's difficult to spell, it's difficult to pronounce, and nobody you know is using the word. Nobody. But I say to you that this is the most important word, single word, that exists in the English language today, which best describes what we are witness to. And it would not have any significance whatsoever were it not for its direct correlation to communitarian law. Remember, EU-style communitarian law of the European Union was 70 to 80 years in the making. In the making. And all of this flows from what we can properly call convergence theory, because this is what was taught most in policy circles, think tanks at the end of World War II. How do we bring together a one world global system of management? Governance is management. Remember, the watchword today is governance. It's not government, because from a communitarian's point of view, nation states are obsolete. That means governments, as we understood them to be in the past, are also obsolete. Everything has been privatized today. Everything is some form of a corporatist entity. Everything. The office of the mayor, where you live, is a corporation. The office of the sheriff is a corporation. Even the person sitting on your city council, is these people have to sign non-compete, non-disclosure agreements. So they have to act by Chatham House rules. What stays behind closed doors must stay behind closed doors. And that's why I say that we live today with what is called the noble lie. Plato talked about it. But going back to communitarian law, early on, these free trade agreements contained a contract clause simply called the supremacy of communitarian law. So all of these free trade agreements today that our government, and I use the word our loosely, as I do the word government, remember government is just mind control, they have, it, let's put it this way, if a multinational corporation in Germany has a contract with another multinational corporation in the States, and in turn, the two are reliant upon a fulfillment contract with another multinational corporation in the People's Republic of China, and there should arise a dispute or conflict in the law requiring adjudication in a court, which law will hold? Well, guess what it is? It's communitarian law, and it's the same law which is, for instance, practiced at the International Court of Justice at The Hague. Remember Milosevic? He was tried under international law. Remember, he died in prison, incommunicado practically, until he died, after which they declared him innocent. So I'll stop right there if you want to add anything, and then we can continue if you wish.
Well, Art, we're coming up to the break. I'd like you just to take a couple more minutes. But what I'd like after the break is for you to explain how what's going on around us today, it does or does not reflect the communitarian approach, and how it affects our lives. I'm thinking of things like open borders, massive influx of migrants, critical race theory, exacerbating relations between the races, homelessness, crime surging, all that, and the way it all ties together, and whether or not you see the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset as being forms of implementation of communitarianism, because I take it you're really outlining what you take to be the threat we confront, which is usually only dimly understood. And what I'm suggesting is it would be, I think, very useful to the audience for you to show how it's being implemented and promoted in events that are taking place in the United States and the world today, possibly even extending to the theft of elections and all the fabricated lawsuits against Trump and everything under the sun, how it is illuminated by appreciating what's going on from the communitarian perspective. Does that sound like a reasonable plan?
Absolutely. And I'd be delighted.
Excellent. Well, go ahead. You got a couple of minutes before. So talk about a bit more. You're dealing at a fairly high level of abstraction, looking up philosophical communitarianism, said to consider classic liberalism to be ontologically and epistemologically incoherent, that ideological communitarianism is characterized as a radical centrist ideology, sometimes marked by socially conservative and economically interventionist policies. You don't need to deal with those, but anything you want to say about how, what are the alternatives to communitarianism, roughly, is what I'm asking.
Well, before we go there, Jim, let's drop back to this overarching agenda. And then also to add, nation states are deemed obsolete, number one. Number two, three parts. Number two, what is going to replace the nation state is what's called the biosecurity state. the biosecurity state. And number three, this in turn is giving rise to what we see the regionalized, data-driven, shall we say, smart city-state. Because they want to force people off the land. They want to herd them into large metroplexes.
Yes, yes. I'd love for you to talk about the 15-minute cities. It sounds very much to me as though you're outlining the approach represented by what's called the New World Order or the Great Reset. Would I be correct in that inference?
Yes, and if we look at that word reset, and we look at it from an etymological perspective, reset in Old Scots law simply can be reduced to one word as a synonym for it, and that word is heist. Heist. Look it up. Reset under Scots law and read what it says. What we're witnessing is a grand theft, grand larceny, writ large on the world stage as it pertains to the theft of your property. Your property.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, remember, Klaus Schwab has told us you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. And I submit it. You know, it's such an absurd thought to have no possessions and to be happier than you've ever been. Those cannot be your own thoughts. And I'm convinced that graphene oxide, for example, can create a mind-brain interface with electronic-like 5G. You can have thoughts imposed upon you from the outside. So you're happier, but those aren't your own thoughts because you've lost your individuality, your creativity, as you put it, your freedom of choice or your free will, your ability to act in accordance with your own preferences, unconstrained and uncompelled. We'll be right back with Lark from Texas.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Lark, please do continue by explaining how current developments are manifestations. I appreciate connecting with the New World Order and the Great Reset. Lay out more of how contemporary events seem to be moving in that direction.
Well, all current events, no matter what, can be explained by this process of what I call zoom out, zoom in. When we analyze events, even events as they unfold in our own lives, minute by minute, day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year, et cetera, this is helpful. Zoom out and zoom in all the time. So I really want to add just a couple of things, you know, because we can do a recap perhaps a little bit down the road here. When we talk about communitarianism, I should probably mention my web address, Jim, because it helps a lot of times to have a visual as you're entertaining new ideas. And that web address is simply tinyurl.com/LarkinTexas, no separation. But if you hear some extraneous noise, that's pecans dropping on the patio cover from the trees. So, but anyway, if you go there, tinyurl.com/LarkinTexas, you'll see the lead article is called Three C's and a Few Words More, in which case I remind the readers that communitarianism is a language, it's a philosophy, it's an ideology, it is a system, it is a law. And you can read it right there. You have to be cognizant of that. You know, the late law professor from Harvard, Harold Berman, who in his lifetime was called a noted Soviet legal expert, he was a law professor at Harvard for 40 years and 20 years more. He said that there was no separation between religion, philosophy, economics, and the law. All separation was illusory. So just to remind the listeners, nation states have been deemed obsolete in the information age. And so they're going to work toward that end. Now, you might want to hold the myth, your cherished belief about America and America in history and the world and your place in the world as an American. But let's not forget that since 9/11, there was a new agency of government created called the Department of Homeland Security. And this thing was already in the works well before the event that we know was 9/11. Okay, they brought in consultants like Evgeny Primakov, former spy chief of this former Soviet Union. They brought in Marcus Wolf of the East German Stasi. They brought in professors like Herman Goldstein, who developed what was called problem-oriented policing, or POP. And they brought in people like Martin Seligman, who has talked about what's called learned helplessness. These things were all created with the help of people, notables like I just mentioned, prior to the event called 9/11. Because since 9/11, all agencies of law enforcement in this country, including the Coast Guard, have been brought under one rubric, one aegis, one umbrella. And what is it they enforce? But communitarian law. And in the meantime, what we have witnessed in our lifetime and before is this steady beat towards what we know today is communitarian law. And we have to ask ourselves at some point, what is communitarian law? And there, if you go to my website, you're going to find, you know, the cliff notes to help you identify it so you can see it in your own world, in your life. But it has had its impact on our courts. We have to know what things are like reflexive law, and we have to know what something which is a policy that was advanced by Samantha Power when she was the UN ambassador or U.S. ambassador to the United Nations in the Obama administration, married to Cass Sunstein, also a member of that administration. They advanced something at the United Nations called R2P, or Responsibility to Protect. So we have to understand that the way the communitarians think, and remember, we're not talking about just one kind of socialist here. We're talking about left socialist and right socialist. We have Republicans like John Huntsman, J-O-N Huntsman, who ostensibly terms himself a Republican, and also former Senator Mike Lee of Utah. John Huntsman is a former governor. Both admit that they are communitarians. It's not just of the right. It's of the left as well in this country. And so we have to understand that nothing these politicians and these talking heads tell us on TV is the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Because number one, they may be bound by contract not to reveal all the details of the truth. And remember this, the greatest lie of them all is the lie of omission. So, forgive me, Jim, regarding current events like the border, the immigration, these are all easily explained. We have to look back to those CAFTA and those NAFTA agreements, those so-called free trade agreements. We can even go back to Bretton Woods. We can go back to those original GATT treaties, things that have happened since end of World War II. Remember the Administrative Procedures Act. Remember the creation of the State of Israel. Remember China went communist in 1949. And how did that happen? Well, it's because the British were in control of China since before 1860. Americans today were spoon-fed a lot of half-truths as they went through their public schooling. And so we do not have a worldview and understanding of history because we weren't provided one. Many things we were not provided. You yourself could attest to this regarding public schooling in this country. We were not taught about how to preserve our life and control our bodies and to nourish our bodies properly. We were not taught about the nature of contracts. Contracts. A contract is a relationship. It's very often rooted in the law. It's rooted in life itself. We can't escape our need for contractual relationship or contract. So we weren't taught about any of these things. We were basically provided the education of a slave. And we have to remember that the people that were bandied about as our leading lights of public education policy at the turn of the 20th century were the same people that were extolled by the Soviets when they created the Soviet Union in the aftermath of the Bolshevik Revolution. And they also extolled the virtues of people like F.W. Taylor, Taylorism, who did some of the best funded time motion studies for the factory workers on Henry Ford's assembly lines. We have to remember, and these are people that are called fathers of scientific management, F.W. Taylor, William Edwards Deming, and Peter Drucker. We have to understand this goes past the left-right dialectic. We're talking about the work of the planners and the people that they hired, that they employed to bring this about. Because you've heard other people say that in terms of American history, we have basically the conflict between the great work and the great experiment. And so what's winning today, the great work or the great experiment? Well, I would say it's the great work. And so it's important that we develop some generals today. And in order to develop generals, let me be so bold as to say we need people like you, Jim, because what I am most fascinated about you and your life, the trajectory of your life, is the fact that your métier is philosophy of history, or of science, forgive me, philosophy of science. But we have to remember that there's other philosophies out there. There are many, in fact. There are many sciences. You know, do we consider the economic sciences and the social sciences the legitimate sciences? Well, you know, back in my day, we called them pseudosciences. So when we look at the curriculum of an average college or university today and compare it to what we saw 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, quite a bit of difference. We can actually draw some conclusions by what we're seeing in terms of what is the curriculum. And I used to be a political rube. I knew nothing about politics. I didn't care about it. Oftentimes, I didn't know who the mayor or the governor was, because I never did trust Uncle Sam or anything connected to Uncle Sam since I was a teenager. I figure if I had to have a partner named Uncle Sam to do anything, then it wasn't worth doing. But that was me, because I was I fell in love with this idea of being a nonconformist. And I champion anybody that I thought was thinking outside of the box, and they too thought of themselves as a nonconformist. Doesn't mean that they didn't associate with people. And most people want to be liked by other people. They don't want to make themselves outcast or outliers. And because we are, after all, a social creature. We can't escape this. No man is an island. But, there's a lot that can be discussed when we talk about what is science. Because, see, along the way, I learned words like sciolism. Comes from the same root, SCI, as science, or scientist. And there's also the word a sciolist. Well, what is a sciolist? A sciolist is a pretender to knowledge. So when we look into the world of philosophy today, you know, we have things like epistemology, but we also have ontology. And so what should our focus be? You know, it's never really an either-or thing. And that's true about much of life itself. You know, when we pick a side, any side, in any conflict or a debate, we have to zoom out and zoom in and garner for ourselves some perspective in terms of our decisions. And we have to realize that this is how the Marxians planned to take over the whole world. That's why they focused on Hegel. Because as long as we choose a side, then we are basically not thinking outside of the box. What we're doing is we are inserting ourselves by and then thereby advancing the grand plan, this scheme of global governance. Because they decided that the word capitalism and the word communism, even the word socialism, were dirty words. And so we had to come up with something new. So since the early 70s, you know, a lot of these discussions were spawned by John Rawls, A Theory of Justice, 1971. These discussions have taken place in academia, think tanks, philanthropic, foundation circles. And the average American has never been interested in these sorts of things. After all, life comes at you fast. You know, we've got the job, we've got the mortgage, we've got school, we've got our social relationships, and all these kind of things kind of get in the way from us being able to take this macro perspective and constantly zoom out and zoom in. And so what they decided is that they had to have a new word. And so that's another reason why you don't hear this word communitarian and communitarianism, or even the words communitarian law even spoken about, whether it's the BBC, the New York Times, or ABC, or Fox News, because they've substituted what we call communitarian buzzwords, because they don't want a lot of people looking into this word communitarianism. If they heard it, they'd go, like I did in 2004, wow, I've never seen this word in print. I've never heard it spoken aloud. What the heck is this? That's when I learned about the law of the European Union being communitarian law. And I thought to myself, well, you know, I need to find out what the heck this is, because nobody I know is talking about it. I never see this word written outside of the internet anywhere. But remember Orwellian newspeak. Here's a quote. Newspeak then is communitarian code speak now. So one of the words that you're going to see that's proliferated across the mediascape, that's the media landscape, is this word community. Listen to your radio, listen to your TV, listen, read the newspapers, the freebies that are put in your mailbox. You know, mine is called Community Impact in Richardson, Texas. I live about a mile from the University of Texas at Dallas. Ghislaine Maxwell's older sister, one of twins, is a professor there. University of Texas, Dallas, and I'm less than 3 miles away from Texas Instruments. The people around me, they want this bio-digital convergence to happen, whether they realize it or not. They want instant connectivity. They want better connection. They want greater speeds of connectivity. And so what's happening is that they're erecting this military-grade apparatus all around us in the form of cell phone towers, smart meters. It's everywhere. You mentioned graphene, graphene oxide. It's one of the cheapest materials to produce on Earth and to replicate. I remember in 2008, there was a book, and you can still read it on the internet. One word is called Devil Vision, the world's first wireless grid. Devil Vision, one word. And it was written by one Major William Bill Gallagher. And so I urge everyone to read that. I mean, I know it's ancient history, but you know something? It would only take you probably a half an hour to read the whole thing. And it's quite useful. So we have to ask ourselves, well, what is the technology that has been erected all around us that's going to enslave us in a smart city? Think of the novel We by Evgeny Zamyatin. That's the name of the novel, W-E-W. And think of the words of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who said famously, I'm trying to recall it, Jim. I'll think of it in just a minute. But basically, he said, to paraphrase, he said, you don't want to live a lie. What a waste to live a lie. And in that quote of his that's famous, and I'll remember it shortly, I substituted the word lie for the capital W-E name of that novel, We, where people were living in glass cities. And they had no freedom whatsoever. That novel, published in New York in the 20s, was the inspiration for people for novels like Anthem, like 1984, like Brave New World, Brave New World Revisited, novels by Kurt Vonnegut, and many others. You can look this up at any online encyclopedia. We, W-E. So, Alexander Solzhenitsyn knew something about what it was like to live in what he called a gulag archipelago. He was a political dissident, as was Evgeny Zamyatin. It wasn't until Francis Maxime Gorky was able to pull some strings that he was able to get the hell out of the country, because that book was not allowed to be published inside the Soviet Union until the 50s. Basically after Stalin died. But this is what's happening. We are allowing this technology to enslave us. And remember, first and foremost, technology is a tool, and it's the language itself that is man's oldest technology. And so when we talk about why we don't hear this word bandied about, no one's talking about it, it's because Newspeak then is communitarian code speak now. In other words, we're talking about words which are turns of phrase and terms of art, which we think mean one thing. They're innocuous sounding, harmless. We pay them no particular heed, but they mean something more specific in the hands of the communitarian policy and agenda makers, the media pundits. And so I've sent you an email in the past. You can do a search, communitarian buzzwords. Because see, where you see evidence of communitarianism and communitarian law in, say, American life or any nation state's life is the language itself, the language. And so we have to realize that if you think quality of life means one thing, or quality learning means one thing, free trade means one thing, and many, many, many other examples, then quite possibly you might be deluding yourself by not realizing that in the hands of your enemy, or your frenemy, shall we say, these are words that are being wielded like weapons. And when you allow them to enter into your brain between your ears and then you term them or you deem them to be convenient words to employ in your conversations with others, in your writing, your communication with other people, then you basically have become a host of a parasite. And so what you are doing is you are actually prolonging the conflict, worsening the conflict. No matter what, you're involved in this dialectical conflict and debate, which the communitarians love. They want to see so many people fighting. In fact, we need only look at the example of Vladislav Surkov, Putin's advisor, who comes from the world of avant-garde theater and film. And on YouTube, you can find it. It's real simple, about 12 minutes. It's called Non-Linear Warfare, A New System of Political Control. Well, see, that's another one of those words in a total war that we have to be cognizant of. Remember, there's chemical warfare, spiritual warfare, economic warfare. And we have to remember words like socioeconomic was a relatively new word in the English language. Well, that was said to be coined by Gorbachev and Amitai Etzioni. They coined that word, and now it's in the English dictionary, socioeconomics. But yeah, do a search. Nonlinear warfare, a new system of political control. It explains so many of the current events of our time.
What? Very nice. Very, very nice. Well, then, Captain.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Lark, I want to thank you for that rather professorial characterization about communitarianism. I think a lot are going to get a lot of benefit from that because today is unusual insofar as my producer has had to hit the road for a medical. We cannot take calls today. I'm sorry about that. Because there's so much going on in the world in addition, intend to turn back to some of those stories, Lark. And you're welcome to comment on any as you may like. We have Jewish settlers telling West Bank Palestinians, get out now because we're coming to kill you. Palestinians in the West Bank reported flyers on their car placed by Jews in the village of Deir Istia, which read, you have one last chance to escape to Jordan in an orderly manner, after which we will kill every enemy and forcibly expel you from our holy land. Take your belongings with you immediately and leave because we are about to arrive. You can most certainly take that to the bank as being a serious, serious threat. Meanwhile, displaced Gazans have headed back north after finding the south is no safer than was the north. Wherever we go, we will die, Sakwala said as she prepared to leave the city of Khan Yunus in the south of the territory to return to Gaza City with her surviving child. She's among roughly 600,000 Palestinians UN officials have said fled south in response to Israel's warning to evacuate for your own safety. Israel's relentless bombardment was launched on October 7th in retaliation for the Hamas attack, which Israeli officials claim killed 1,400 people. The strike, which the Hamas-run health ministry says have killed more than 7,000, were initially concentrated in Gaza City. But repeated deadly strikes on the south of the territory in recent days have prompted 30,000 of the displaced to head back home, according to UN figures. South Front is reporting, and this is a highly reliable website, Israel on quest for regional war. Israel continues to escalate its military operation beyond the Gaza Strip, increasing the threat of a large-scale conflict in the Middle East. Escalation was reported on the front with Syria on October 25th. In the early morning, the IDF carried out a series of airstrikes against positions of the Syrian Arab Army in the southern governorate of Daraa in response to a rocket attack that targeted the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights a day earlier. The strikes claimed the lives of 8 Syrian troops and left at least 7 others wounded. Later in the afternoon, a series of Israeli airstrikes hit Aleppo International Airport in northern Syria, knocking it out of service. The attack marked the 4th time the airport has been hit since the Israeli-Hamas war broke out on October 7th. The airport was targeted by IDF on October 12th, 14th, and 22nd and was due to open after repairs following the last strike. The attacks on October 12th and 22nd also targeted Damascus International Airport near the Syrian capital. The last on the airport claimed the lives of two civilian employees. Meanwhile, widening the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is being fanned by yellow journalism, stoking potential war on Iran. This is from Covert Action magazine. The Wall Street Journal blames Iran for helping to plot Tribe of Nova massacre when it's uncorroborated. During the late 1800s, a Hearst yellow press ran stories falsely accusing Spain of sinking the USS Maine in order to help mobilize public opinion in support of the Spanish-American War that resulted in the U.S. colonization of Cuba and the Philippines. In the 100-plus years since, the same formula has been followed time and time again. The latest target appears to be Iran, whose Islamist government, neoconservatives in Washington and Tel Aviv have long dreamed of overthrowing. On October 8th, the Wall Street Journal accused Iran of helping to plan the Tribe of Nova massacre in a mosque terrorist attack on an Israeli music festival that has triggered renewed outbreak of war in the Middle East. Let me add, it was all set up. This was Bibi's plans. The IDF were ordered to stand down. Their weapons were even taken away. The defense was breached at as many as 15 locations. It's simply preposterous to think that this most secure barrier, perhaps in the entire world, could have been breached without Israel knowing. Bibi wanted to have a pretext for the slaughter he intends to conduct in Gaza. Remember, from the Israeli point of view, the final solution to the Palestinian problem is to load all the Palestinians aboard a ship, float it out to sea, and sink it. Well, any way they can get Palestinians out of Palestine and elsewhere is exactly what they want. The Wall Street Journal's article entitled "Iran Helped Plot Attack on Israel Over Several Weeks" was written by Summer Saeed, Mayotte Fasson, and Stephen Kalin, with assistance by Michael Gordon, a former New York Times reporter, who was the lead author of a September 2002 piece hyping the idea that Iraq was trying to procure special aluminum tubes for its nuclear weapons program. Remember that absurdity? In 2007, Gordon, an advocate for bombing Iraq, also wrote articles relying heavily on anonymous U.S. sources alleging that the Iranian government was sending weapons into Iraq. The Wall Street Journal piece was also based on anonymous sources, specifically unnamed senior members of Hamas, Hezbollah, and officers of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard. They claimed that the Tribe of Nova massacre, in which Hamas militants attacked an all-night concert in a field near a kibbutz on the Israeli-Gaza border and killed hundreds of Jewish concert-goers, was planned in a meeting in Beirut attended by Iranian officials who allegedly gave the green light for the attack. This is such bullshit. It is embarrassing. Mahmoud Mardani, a senior Hamas official, was quoted in the piece, however, stating that Hamas planned the attacks on its own, which makes the article's headline misleading. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who, of course, as I reported before, explained to President Erdogan of Turkey that he approached this problem as a Jew, not as an American, and who increasingly appears to be our commander-in-chief in relation to foreign affairs, told CNN, "We have not yet seen evidence at Iran directed or was behind this particular attack, but there is certainly a long relationship. One of his more responsible statements. Lincoln's comments undercut the Wall Street Journal headline, though subtly insinuate that Iran was or could have been behind the attacks and that evidence would emerge about it. In 2003, the neoconservatives thought that Iraq would be a cakewalk and that the U.S. would quickly move on to overthrow Iran's Islamic regime, which in 1979 had overthrown the Shah, a close U.S. and Israeli ally who had been installed in a CIA coup that was overseen by Kermit Roosevelt, who was a cousin of Theodore in 1953, because their prime minister Mossadegh had nationalized the oil industry in Iran to benefit the Iranian people, and the British and American oil companies wanted their control back. A popular saying among members of the Bush administration during the run-up to the invasion of Iraq was, "Forget Baghdad, real men go to Tehran." And as I mentioned before, I have been to Tehran. I have boundless admiration for Iran, the Iranian people, its great culture and heritage, which, as I've already emphasized but repeat again, worth appreciating. Iran has not launched a war of aggression against any other state since 1775. 1775! I mean, this is absolutely stunning stuff. The Constitution was only ratified in 1776, and George Washington elected our first president in 1779, so longer than the United States has existed as a constitutional republic. Iran has not launched a war of aggression against any other state. The October 9th Wall Street Journal article suggested that since April, when China brokered a diplomatic alliance between Iran and Saudi Arabia, the Iranian regime had begun training, arming, and financing militias antagonistic to Israel, including Hezbollah and Hamas. A primary concern was that Israel's improved relations with Egypt, Jordan, and the Gulf Arab states would create a chain of U.S. allies linking three key choke points of global trade, the Suez Canal, the Strait of Hormuz, and the Bab el-Mandeb connecting the Red Sea to the Arabian. Ismail Qana, a leader of Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps, commander of its Quds Force, a division responsible for extraterritorial military and clandestine operations, allegedly began attacking biweekly meetings in Beirut, where the Tribe of Nova massacre was planned, along with Hezbollah leader Hussein Nasrallah, Islamic Jihad leader Zayed al-Nakaya, and Saleh, or Hamas military chief. How convenient. Bundle all your enemies together and blame them for a massacre that you have inspired yourself. According to the Wall Street Journal, Iranian Foreign Minister Hussein Emir Abdollin attended at least two of the meetings as well. Sure. Lena Kotbal, director of the University of London Middle East Institute, was quoted in the Wall Street Journal article saying, "An attack of such scope, Tribe of Nova massacre, could only have happened after months of planning and would not have happened without coordination with Iran." Meanwhile, blaming Biden for enriching Iran and enabling the attacks. The Wall Street Journal pattern of yellow journalism continued when it published an editorial on October 10th, blaming the Biden admin for the Tribe of Nova massacre by failing to enforce oil sanctions on Iran, thus helping Iran to finance Hamas. Entitled, "How Biden's Policy Enriched Iran," the editorial suggested that the previous day's report, Iran had signed off on the Hamas assault on Israel, should jolt President Biden from his failed Iran strategy, which was one of appeasement. While technically true that the $6 billion the Biden admin unfroze in exchange for the release of five American prisoners wasn't used to attack Israel, there was no question that the U.S. decision to ease enforcement of all oil sanctions against Iran aided Israel's enemies, Hezbollah and Hamas. According to the Journal, Iran may not have directly spent any money from the unfrozen $6 billion account, but would have anticipated the increased cash flow and could plot the attacks. The problem with this logic is that there is no proof of any direct use of U.S. funds, nor that Iran was actually involved in the planning. The Journal's editors, furthermore, never questioned whether there was any legitimate and legal reason in the first place for the U.S. to have applied oil sanctions on Iran or to have frozen its assets. For years, the Wall Street Journal had provided a platform for neoconservative war hawks who have accused Iran of all kinds of crimes, including developing a nuclear program that allegedly serves as an existential threat to the U.S. and Israel, though the program does not actually exist. That's splendid. Very nice. Turning to a different set of issues, here's a fascinating story. This is from conservativenewszone.com. Biden's personal Gestapo created special division of FBI tasked with shutting down investigation into his family members, even as 40-plus informants exposed crimes. The Biden crime family have been betraying the American people for quite some time now, trading influence to foreign nations for piles of cash. But how have they managed to get away with what is effectively treason? It's no secret that the Department of Justice has been protecting them, running interference on their behalf to ensure that no member of this criminal syndicate is held accountable for selling out America. But according to new revelations, there is a special unit within the FBI that has been doing the bulk of the work in keeping the Bidens out of trouble. Biden's personal Gestapo. Republican Senator Chuck Grassley penned a letter to Democrat operatives, Attorney General Merrick Garland and FBI Director Christopher Wray, detailing the discovery of a long-running DOJ and FBI plot to shut down any investigations into the Biden family. In that letter, Grassley reveals that the Bureau received criminal information from more than 40 confidential human sources on the three key pieces of the Biden crime family players, really, Joe, Hunter, and James. He adds that multiple credible whistleblowers have confirmed him that thanks to a specific special task force within the FBI's Washington field office, these sources were silenced. Grassley wrote, based on the information provided to my office over a period of years by multiple credible whistleblowers, there appears to be an effort within the Justice Department and FBI to shut down investigative activity relating to the Biden family. Such a decision points to significant political bias infecting the decision-making of not only the Attorney General and the FBI Director, but also line agents and prosecutors. This secretive Gestapo-esque FBI unit existed explicitly to undermine and discredit any of the information provided by these sources as it related to the Biden family. The FBI special unit would reportedly discredit information coming from the FBI informants as foreign disinformation, almost immediately cutting off any chance for an actual investigation. And it's not as though the secret division of the Washington Field Office actually believed it was foreign disinformation, considering the confidential informants in their info had already been fully vetted by other FBI field offices. The large majority of those sources accused by Biden's cover-up squad were found to have zero association with any known foreign disinformation channels, as per the other field offices. If these sources provided information even half as damning as the one who exposed Joe Biden's involvement in a $10 million bribery scheme with Ukrainian energy company Burisma, then that could mean that Biden's have committed an unthinkable amount of crime, all swept under the rug by Biden's personal FBI protection service. According to Grassley, these sources date and their intel dates all the way back to the early days of Biden's time as vice president in the Obama White House. Our republic cannot survive such a political infection, and you have an obligation to this country to clear the air, Grassley wrote, giving FBI and DOJ until November 17th to provide answers about what the hell is going on. Now, that, for a certainty, is what we have, you know, in the White House, so it's not represented by the real Joe, who, so far as I can tell, died around 2017, or anyone who wants to compare, you know. And I think at this point there's been more than one Biden double, but his whole manner, body language, actually shape of skull, even color of eyes, ears are not the same. It's on my blog at jameshfetzer.org. And whereas you can see the guy we have today is rather cadaverish, he completely lacks affect. You don't get any emotion or expression from him. He rarely uses gestures. He's highly inarticulate, even to the point of incoherence. If you go back a few years and I reach back to earlier video of Biden meeting with constituents, Biden himself, the real guy, was very articulate, very expressive, uses hands and arms in conversation extensively, as does yours truly. In other words, it was a completely different guy, and of course, not even their signatures match. Well, get this now. This is terribly interesting. Judicial Watch has filed a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against the United States Department of Homeland Security for video recordings related to the death of the Obama's personal chef, Devari Campbell, in July. Other reports I have here shows that Obama was present at the scene when his chef allegedly drowned in what turned out to be 3 feet of water, where he was actually an accomplished swimmer. We have plenty of video tracking that. And another report from Judicial Watch has it that Obama was hanging around when witnesses were giving information so he could overhear exactly what they had to say. Pretty disgusting. I've explained, of course, many times before that I believe Obama actually killed the chef. I suspect they may or may not have been engaged in gay sex, though it would not surprise me. Where it turns out that Obama had bandages over the fingers of his left hand and a black eye the following day on the golf course that appeared to have been inflicted during their altercation, and where my best guess would be he died in the Biden in the Obama family home, and then the body was transported. Where if you listen to the call-in, it's very clear they were using a member of the Secret Service who actually had no direct personal knowledge to make the phone call, because he repeatedly has to turn and ask others present as to what he should say in answer to questions about the 911 call. But frankly, it's ridiculous. It's rehearsed. It's phony. It's fake. At one point, in response to a question, you can hear a voice in the background that I detect to have been Barack Obama himself. This is really outrageous what's taking place. And I'm very impressed that Judicial Watch is not letting this go. Mind you, I conclude Israel is planning to use banned chemical weapons in Gaza. There seem to be no ethical limits to the IDF's anti-humanitarian practices against the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. According to local sources, Israeli military is planning a chemical attack against Hamas underground tunnels. In addition to being illegal, the practice seems anti-strategic because with this maneuver, IDF could also kill Israeli citizens kept as prisoners of war by Hamas and the bunkers. But for them, that's just collateral damage. Frankly, they don't give a damn. I mentioned two events in Buenos Aires where they blew up the Israeli embassy. They claimed it was a car bomb, but the building blew up from the inside out in order to attract attention. But it only got about 12 casualties. So months later, they blew up the Jewish community center with 84 casualties. And then guess what? Claiming it was a car bomb when there was no evidence of any car having been in the vicinity. They claimed the explosion had been so powerful it had blown the car into the ground. And guess what? They brought in an Israeli expert who discovered one tiny part of the car. Guess what? The VIN number. That's how they play the game. Thank you for being here today, and I reiterate, the situation getting more and more serious. Spend as much time as you can over this weekend with family, friends, and people you love and care about. We do not know how much time we have left.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their